This week in the news, we talk to the Texas Scorecard Bureaus about fake Republicans, Democrats inducing non-citizens to register to vote, and about the big Trump Cruz rally down in Houston. In our interview, we sit down with John Browning, candidate for the 5th Court of Appeals, and talk about the importance of those judicial races on your ballot this November. And we'll close with a commentary about how your tax dollars will be used to lobby against you during the upcoming legislative session. Coming to you from the 1836 studios, this is Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. You can subscribe to the show, to our podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play. Find us on the web at www.texasscorecard.com. With this week's news, I wanted to bring in Ross Kessig with Empower Texans. You got an interesting piece up. A lot of quote-unquote fake Republicans exposing who they really are this cycle. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, we have quite a few former Republican elected officials, quote-unquote Republicans, who are now endorsing Democrats. And we even have a sitting Republican county judge out of Harris County who's openly endorsing Democrats in the November election.
Yeah, so you kind of hail from North Texas. Let's start with some of these North Texas guys. Pretty interesting what we're seeing them do.
Yeah, so former state representative Bennett Ratliff, his father was former lieutenant governor of Texas.
Infamously famous, the 51% Republican lieutenant governor.
Exactly. And then his family went into the lobby. So his voting record wasn't very strong for taxpayers. And after he got defeated in the 2014 Republican primary and then again in the 2016 Republican primary by conservative stalwart Matt Rinaldi, Bennett has now come out full-fledged and has signed a letter publicly endorsing Julie Johnson, which is the Democrat opponent of Rinaldi. And Julie Johnson is also endorsed by Barack Obama.
Yeah, so a little confluence there. Similar kind of neck of the woods, Villalba. Pretty funny what he's done since he's been off the ballot.
Yeah, lame duck Jason Villalba on his way out of the legislature. He lost his primary in 2018. To conservative Lisa Luby Ryan. He immediately went on Twitter after he lost and encouraged constituents to vote against her, vote for the Democrat. And again, this is the Jason Villalba who had a dismal voting record on fiscal issues, but always called himself, you know, the Reagan-esque Republican, apparently.
Mr. Reagan, but he endorses the Democrat.
Yeah, now endorsing the Democrat. And now he also called for the impeachment of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So he went full-fledged, unhinged left.
Bob Dole, interesting one. This is Mr. Pro-Life. He was Mr. Republican, according to certain sources. Got kicked out of the ledge. He's doing the same thing.
Yeah, former state senator. You know, he was the most conservative since Ronald Reagan. Voting record was not very good. He lost his primary to Bob Hall, a current state senator, and now, you know, the defeated duel, the wrong Bob for the job, is now out shilling for the Democrat.
Yeah. So, all right. So, there's a few North Texas examples. These are all kind of washed up former politicians. They leave office. They say they're conservatives. They run as conservatives. They get defeated. Oh, all of a sudden they're endorsing Democrats. But you have some sitting Republicans doing this, specifically Ed Emmett down in Harris County.
Right. The sitting Republican county judge. County judges are kind of like the mayor of the county, kind of the head administrative lead role of the county government. You know, Ed Emmett has famously, you know, been an apologist for, you know, Joe Strauss, you know, who was drew his support from the Democrat caucus in the Texas House. He's now out shilling for the Democrat as well. He told the Houston Chronicle that he was going to be voting for Mike Collier for lieutenant governor against the incumbent Republican conservative Dan Patrick. So he's in office as a Republican, but he is doing nothing to help the actual Republican ticket, encouraging people to vote Democrat.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you covering this. I agree with you. Fake Republicans are what's wrong with the GOP.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of folks that say, oh, we need a big tent in the Republican Party, but these are folks who are actually switching tents.
Thanks for your reporting, Ross.
Thank you.
Next, let's go up to Aaron Anderson in the DFW Bureau. Aaron, you've kind of become our resident expert on election fraud issues, and we've got a whopper this week. The Texas Democratic Party under investigation for inducing non-citizens to register to vote.
That's right, Tony. A complaint filed last week in a couple of South Texas counties showed that the Texas Democrat Party was sending out mailers with voter registration applications that had information pre-filled on the form, including stating that applicants were U.S. citizens. And many of those applications, in fact, went to people who are not U.S. citizens.
Yeah, and so even legal residents or illegal aliens, of course, are not allowed to vote in our elections. And there's a question on the application. Hey, are you a citizen? And this is, I mean, it's designed to prompt the person to go, hey, you know, maybe I need to answer this question. And the Democratic Party sent it out and said, oh, no. The correct answer here is, yes, I am a citizen.
That's right, Tony. And that checkbox is the only verification, if you will, of an applicant's U.S. citizenship. There's no other verifying that's done. It's an honor system. So by pre-checking those boxes, they're not giving the applicant the opportunity to answer that honestly, putting them in some legal jeopardy. And it's actually against the Texas State Election Code to induce somebody to submit false information on a voter registration application. And that's what it looks like the Texas Democrat Party was doing here.
Yeah, you've got a pretty strong response from Governor Abbott and from the Secretary of State coming in and saying, hey, you're putting these people potentially at very serious legal risk committing felonies by voting when they're not supposed to be voting.
That's right. A number of people who received the forms actually contacted the Secretary of State's office. He issued a stern warning about this activity and then referred the case over to Attorney General Ken Paxton's office for investigation. And as Governor Abbott had tweeted, there could be serious consequences for this action.
Yeah, I hope that they give it a thorough investigation because this is certainly a real problem. Thank you for your reporting on it, Aaron.
Absolutely, Tony. Thank you.
Finally, let's turn to Brandon Walton's Capitol Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. Brandon, you took a trip down to Houston for the big Trump Cruz rally. How did that go?
That's right. President Donald Trump flew into Houston to hold a huge rally for Senator Ted Cruz down at the Toyota Center. Of course, Cruz, somebody he had a little bit of contention with in the 2016 presidential primary. Was a little nasty in his own words, but has since then buried the hatchet and said, actually, you know, in his remarks, opened it up saying that, you know, when it comes to passing his America First agenda of tax reform and regulatory reform as well, all the conservative stuff he's passing in the Senate, nobody has been more helpful in passing that agenda than Senator Ted Cruz.
You know, some of the liberal commentators kind of said, oh, well, you know, Beto's drawing in all these big crowds in this reelection race. Cruz and Trump, they're not going to be able to do it. Big turnout.
That's right. And actually, you know, after a venue change to sort of accommodate the inpouring of people signing up for tickets. I mean, they packed the Toyota Center. So it seats about 20,000 people with reports of another 15, 20,000 or more outside watching on screens.
It was kind of like a tailgate atmosphere, like a sporting event.
Yes, live music, food. It was really an all-day amazing thing to watch.
Yeah, pretty neat. So it wasn't just Cruz and Trump there. You had some other statewide leaders joining in as well.
Oh, you did. And you had Governor Greg Abbott opening up the rally, as well as Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who delivered a fiery speech to the crowd of conservatives in the audience, referring to Beto O'Rourke, of course, Cruz's opponent, saying, you know, Beto stands for border enforcement, totally optional.
Which, that's pretty good.
To big applause, as you can imagine, from the crowd.
So Trump gave a real nice, long speech, you know, like an hour or so, right? What are some of the issues he touched on?
Yeah, so in his speech, yes, over an hour. I mean, he talked about all the success they've had just in their 2 years, you know, in office, talking about tax cuts and talking about current issues, the of course, the incoming caravan of migrants and what a Democrat-controlled Congress would mean, encouraging everybody to get out and vote straight-ticket Republican.
How'd the crowd receive it? I mean, was it raucous? Was it like you saw during the campaign or
what? It was absolutely raucous. It has to be one of the biggest rallies he's ever held.
Yeah, pretty neat. Well, appreciate you getting down there and reporting on it, and exciting to see everybody get there together, and the president and all the statewides coming together. It really seems like there's a head of steam coming together for Cruz.
Exactly, and as Donald Trump would say, looks like there's a red wave on the horizon.
That's right. Thanks for your reporting, Brandon.
Thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's my pleasure to welcome on Texas Scorecard Radio this week, John Browning, candidate for the 5th Court of Appeals. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be here.
Well, you know, I wanted to have you on. You know, voters are going to the polls now, and a lot of people, they're going, they're thinking, hey, you know, I'm a Republican, I'm going to vote Republican, I'm a Democrat, I'm going to vote Democrat. They know kind of who they are politically, but a lot of that's based on policy, that sort of thing. Well, we have this privilege in Texas to get to vote on our judges, and you as a very experienced attorney and a very qualified candidate for the Court of Appeals, I wanted to have you on to talk. We'll talk a little bit about your race. I know it's really unique and interesting, but to talk about these judicial races generally, why it is that people should be paying attention to races like yours. But first, tell us a little bit about your race. I know you've got a pretty hot and heated race there in the Dallas area for the Court of Appeals. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there. It's a big story.
Yeah, sure. And this really is kind of a pivotal thing. The 5th Court of Appeals, which is the biggest and the busiest appellate court in the state, has 13 justices on it. And this cycle, eight of the seats are up. Six are incumbents who are seeking reelection. And then because of retirements on the court, there are two open seats. And I'm the Republican candidate for one of those two open seats, place 11. So it really is an opportunity that Democrats have talked openly about trying to flip the court. And, of course, we on the Republican side, you know, want to maintain what has traditionally been a great conservative, very highly regarded and, coincidentally, all Republican court.
Yeah, you know, I think I've borrowed a term. I believe I may have stolen it from you a while back. It is to view these courts of appeals as a firewall.
Absolutely.
You have the Dallas County courts, district courts, which, you know, all of these kind of infamously flipped to a bunch of Democrat judges, 2006, 2008, one of those cycles. And since then, you know, if you're a litigant in that area and you're in court, you know, you might get a bad ruling here. Well, you've been able to rely on going up to this Court of Appeals, but that's now at stake with the Democrats putting a huge target on this very important, like we said, firewall for justice.
That's absolutely right, Tony. And in fact, for 29 years, I've been trying cases and handling appeals. And, you know, when the courthouse in Dallas went blue in 2006, and since then, I've been in court and had some of these liberal Democrat trial judges tell me to my face in front of clients, well, Mr. Browning, you're right on the law. That is what the statute says, or that is what the Texas Supreme Court has said we need to follow. But I'm going to deny your motion because I simply don't agree with the law. And so we don't need liberal activist judges who are going to legislate from the bench. And thank goodness we've had this good conservative Fifth Court of Appeals to be, as you say, that firewall. And it's just absolutely critical because for all practical purposes, the appellate courts are our last resort. The Texas Supreme Court, our highest court, and the Court of Criminal Appeals, our highest criminal court in the state, they only take about 80 cases a year each. And that represents less than 1/2 of 1% of all the cases. So for 99.5%, the last stop on the road is the appellate courts, like the Fifth Court of Appeals.
Yeah, it's just essential that these courts get these things right. Well, so we've talked a little bit about, you know, you've mentioned liberal activist judges, and we talked about Republican judges being on the Fifth Court of Appeals. Let's talk a little bit about that, the difference between a Republican and a Democrat, kind of archetypical, you know, Republican or Democrat judge. People know what a Republican, you know, they go, okay, Republicans, lower taxes, limited government, Democrats, more welfare spending, you know, open borders, you know, these kind of things. But when we're talking about judges, this is something different. It's about how do you do the job of a judge.
Exactly. And it's about protecting the rule of law and interpreting the law and the Constitution. For a Republican judge, that's very simple. You know, it echoes the principles of the Republican Party, which is, you know, we're going to follow the Constitution. We're going to follow the law as it's written, as it was intended, not as an individual judge may feel like it should be interpreted on any given day. You know, we don't follow this or subscribe to this idea of a so-called living constitution that means that we can have things subject to change in the way that it's interpreted. We believe that the founders were pretty smart people who got it right, and we believe in not allowing our personal feelings or whims to dictate how the law should be interpreted, such that, you know, for some of these Democrat judges, you'll have a different ruling on a Tuesday than you'll have the following week, depending on who it is and how they feel, whereas a Republican judge is simply going to apply the law.
Now, you know, if I could push back on that a little bit, you know, there is this sense of justice, right? And whenever you think about the way courts run, there is this sense that, okay, this is a just result or this isn't a just result. So is there not some inkling of fairness or kind of personal kind of view of the case that comes into these kinds of things and in applying the law?
Well, you know, we're all going to bring our own life experiences and, you know, personal, you know, feelings. I mean, that is, you know, we're all human. But for judges, the role is not to legislate. The role is to apply the law and not make the law. We believe that we have the people have elected their legislators for a reason, and have chosen to express the will of the people legislatively. And there may be laws that are passed that I may not, as a judge, necessarily agree with, but I'm bound to apply the law, you know, as it is. My late friend and mentor, Justice Antonin Scalia of the Supreme Court, told me once that if you're good at your job as a judge, you know, you're going to be issuing opinions, making rulings that you don't necessarily as a person happen to agree with or like. That is, you know, going to be part and parcel of the job.
Well, and I think sometimes it's a feeling you may want some litigant to be vindicated, but there's a whole system and a whole process and procedure that is important to protect. And so you see people fall short of something, just not handle something procedurally correctly. Well, it's important that system be maintained. You can't just have you can't run the system willy-nilly. So there are important concepts at stake. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, it's very difficult for voters out there, I think, sometimes to approach judges. They don't know what questions that they ought to be asking. They're not clear. They know that sometimes they ask a question and the candidate or the judge will say, well, I can't answer that question because that touches on a potential case that may arise. How should voters be approaching judicial candidates? What kind of questions should they be asking? What kind of questions shouldn't they be asking?
Well, and Tony, you just hit on one of them. One of the things that really they shouldn't ask, because the judge is, or judicial candidate, is going to be bound by our canons of judicial ethics, which do also apply to candidates and not just those who are currently serving on the bench, is that we're not allowed to comment on either pending cases or on issues that may come before the court. So if someone were to ask me to opine upon something that may actually come before me, you know, I have to respectfully, you know, decline on that. Now, what questions they can ask have to do with really the kind of qualities and caliber we want to see in our judges. For example, experience. In, you know, in my race and the races involving the other Republican candidates for the Fifth Court of Appeals, there's a dramatic difference simply in qualifications and experience. We're talking the Dallas Morning News, which is hardly, you know, fond of conservatives, gave their endorsement to all eight of us Republican candidates simply because there was such a dramatic difference in the qualifications and experience. Many of the Democratic candidates that are up challenging us have never even handled an appeal, and yet they want to be appellate justices. Some have never tried a case or been inside a courtroom. Many of them are lacking in terms of years of experience. For example, you know, to be an appellate justice by Texas statute, even to be eligible to serve, you have to be a licensed practicing attorney for a minimum of 10 years. Some of the Democratic candidates, like my challenger, he's only been practicing for about 12 years, and eight of those years were spent outside of Texas, not even applying Texas law in Texas courtrooms. So there's a dramatic difference. All of us have been endorsed by the Dallas Morning News. In my race, I was called the clear choice because of the difference between my 29 years of experience and my very extensive trial and appellate experience. All of us received the qualified rating from the nonpartisan Committee for a Qualified Judiciary. Many of the Democratic challengers were not rated as qualified, including my opponent.
Well, in addition to experience, it is appropriate to ask questions about judicial philosophy.
Absolutely.
These general questions. So how would somebody approach that and ask that sort of question of a judge without kind of touching on specific issues that might come before a court?
Sure. Well, there are two ways. One, you can do your homework and see what groups have endorsed or supported the judge or judicial candidate. I'm proud to have been endorsed by virtually every conservative organization in Texas, including the largest, pro-life organizations in the state that make endorsements. In part, you know, one reason to rely upon endorsements is because many of these organizations have already gone through with the candidates a very extensive vetting process,
sure,
having them complete extensive questionnaires, asking for writing samples. And as we all know, for an appellate justice whose job is going to be writing opinions, that really is a very, very crucial skill set. In addition, you know, many of these organizations have also had the candidates go through personal interviews where they can, complete this vetting process. So doing the homework and seeing what groups have already endorsed the judge or judicial candidate is a crucial thing. Yeah. And I've had people come up to me on the campaign trail or at, political gatherings and just say, what is your judicial philosophy? And I'm proud to say that, you know, like my late friend and mentor, Justice Scalia, I subscribe to an originalist view of the Constitution and believe in applying the law as it is, as it was written, rather than how I would like it to be.
Exactly. Well, I appreciate you shedding some light on this. I think we're running out of time, but before we finish, tell listeners out there, where can they learn more about your campaign, get connected with you in these closing days of the race?
Absolutely. Well, they can go visit my campaign website, which is www.johnbrowningforjustice.com, or they can visit and I hope like and share my campaign Facebook page, www.facebook.com/JohnBrowningForJustice. And we love engaging with the voters out there. I've been out at early voting locations throughout the 5th District, and we're getting a tremendous amount of support, and you know, we're hoping for the best.
Well, great. Well, keep up the good work out there, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tony. I appreciate it.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers Program? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials in order to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearer logo on it. As a promo, we gave away a beautiful custom-engraved Glock handgun. Sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S.com.
Well, the legislative session is just around the corner. In this week's commentary, Sal Ayala tells us how some of our tax dollars will be used against us.
With no say in the matter whatsoever, taxpayers across the state are forced to foot the bill for lobbyist advocacy efforts in the legislature to the tune of millions of dollars per legislative session. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Sal Ayala. Often, these tax dollars are spent advocating for policy positions that are often at direct odds with the interest of the taxpayers who fund them. Taxpayer-funded lobbying is defined as the practice of using funds that come directly or indirectly from taxpayers for political lobbying purposes. What sorts of policy positions? The Texas Municipal League, a voluntary association of municipalities, provides a telling guide as to what kind of big government measures these resources are spent defending, or alternatively, the pro-taxpayer reforms they oppose. Items such as defending involuntary annexation, opposing property tax limits, opposing ballot transparency, and opposing bond reform are just a few of the fundamentally anti-taxpayer items this money is spent on. Thomas Jefferson once said, quote, "To compel a man to furnish funds for the propagation of ideas he disbelieves and abhors is sinful and tyrannical," unquote. In addition to using taxes raised to directly hire lobbyists, governments often use taxpayer dollars to pay association fees, which are then used to, you guessed it, lobbying for things against their interest or to which they may be opposed. According to reports filed with the state by lobbyists, as much as $376 million was spent to influence state policymakers in 2017. In the same year, 11% of the lobbying dollars spent, or about $41 million, was spent by the government to hire outside lobbyists to lobby government. The city of Austin alone spends about $1 million annually to lobby the legislature, employing 14 lobbyists, consisting of both independent hired guns and full-time city employees. Meanwhile, Dallas is preparing their legislative strategy to fight conservative efforts in the state legislature, such as property tax reform, according to a meeting of the ad hoc legislative committee that recently met. Clifford Sparks, who serves essentially as Dallas's chief lobbyist, told council members, quote, "In the past, we've been able to outmaneuver conservative legislators as a city without our lobbyists, but now they figured out the lay of the land," unquote. During the last two legislative sessions, bills were filed to curb the practice of tax-funded lobbying. House Bill 3219 by State Rep. Matt Shaheen and Senate Bill 445 by State Senator Connie Burton both died in the House General Investigating and Ethics Committee, chaired by liberal Republican and establishment foot soldier State Rep. Sarah Davis of Houston. Grassroots conservatives across Texas consider the practice of tax-funded lobbying anathema to limited government principles enough to dedicate a plank of the Texas GOP platform expressing their opposition. Plank 217 reads, "We urge the Texas legislature enact legislation that prohibits tax-funded contract lobbying." To end the practice of tax-funded lobbying, the legislature should, one, ban the ability of local governments to hire outside lobbyists and legislative consultants. Two, prohibit political subdivisions from using public funds to hire someone whose main job is to lobby government entities. And three, prohibit public funds from flowing to public agency associations. I'm Sal Ayala, and this was your Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, that's a wrap on this week's program. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.